My name is Jacob or Jacobo, and this is Rich.
Hello.
And we're from an anarchist collective in San Diego, which is the opposite border of the border we're on now, which is in the southwest. But this is this United States thing we're way down here. Right, and like right now we're way up there. And so, but there's a lot of similarities, especially with a lot of Canadian border struggles. So we're really excited to be up here to talk to our Canadian friends about how they're struggling against certain border regimes, and which we call border, like, institutions of violence. And there's a lot of specifics about this. There's a lot of details. People, groups, projects, acts, legislation, confrontations. So
we're only going to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So if you want to know more about the details about all these things, that could come in question and answer period.
But more importantly, I mean, I think, so like a lot of what we're going to be talking about is specific to the U.S.-Mexico border and specific to California. But when we start to talk more about the border, a lot of these things are universals to borders and also to, you know, the U.S.-Canadian border. Like I said, there's always been vigilante groups, but they've been small and disparate. And right now, we've had, they've kind of developed this concept of the Minutemen, which is like this kind of strange bastardization of this early American, I don't even know the history of the Minutemen, but it started in California, and various groups, like, kind of, there's been a lot of anti-immigrant groups existing, small groups that protest things like, they're usually in rural areas, white rural areas, and they got this concept of the Minutemen, and they've kind of all rallied around it, and it showed there's been a certain amount of, like, racist unity, and so you've seen these Minutemen groups, like, popping up all over the place. Like, they just came and spoke in Long Island, like, one of the founders came and spoke in Long Island to some other folks that were hoping to start another group, I think. And the idea is that there's not enough Border Patrol, and the Border Patrol are under-equipped. And there's over 10,000 Border Patrol agents, but they use all of this language of, like, an invasion of the border and all kinds. Basically, their idea is they're like an auxiliary to the border. They want to be, like, some differ. Some actually want to form an auxiliary, like a citizens, in the U.S. there's, well, here, the Coast Guard has, like, an auxiliary, which is like a citizens wing of the Coast Guard. And so some people want to form, like, an auxiliary to the Border Patrol. Most of them just want to raise attention and create a media spectacle in order to get more Border Patrol and just, like, seal the borders. Mm-hmm. So there's been these various groups that have formed, and they've come to the border armed and basically, like, patrolled it. I mean, most of it's a media spectacle, because most of them just, like, sit there in their lawn chairs. And it's, like, old retired people, mostly. But there's a lot of activity going on, like, in Los Angeles. There's a lot of, like, connection and communication between these groups, and, like, in Los Angeles, there's this group called Save Our State, and they, like, have protested, like, day labor sites and Home Depots, where more people get, where immigrants get picked up for day labor, and like, Nazis have actually come to their rallies, and they've, you know, rallied together.
Yeah, so the Minutemen are basically, they're coming out of a whole range of factors in the border region and in the country as a whole. A widespread anti-immigrant fervor, a rise in the concept of the illegal, the alien, the other, the terrorist now. According to some documents, illegal immigrants are terrorists. And the Minutemen are basically a citizen's response, right? An activist response. The newspaper calls him activist, right? So if you ever had trouble with that word, now you have it even more. they're citizen activists patrolling the border for our security. So, and who we are is taken for granted. What our culture is taken for granted. What security is taken for granted. So a lot of the debates about the Minutemen are very narrow, right? Because the framework is within their framework. It's always like, they can always respond to the press and with anyone who talks to them, do you want to defend our border? Yes or no? Do you want to, what happens if a terrorist attack comes through? And with that little spectacle of a framework, you can't get anywhere in actually talking about liberation and freedom and like human dignity. And
Who us are, who we are.
Who we are, culture.
So, actually they started in Arizona in April. And in Arizona, there wasn't an active resistance. There was like some people monitoring them, but there wasn't an active resistance to them. And so when they came to California, it was a very different scenario.
That's one of the, that guy right there is James Chase. He is the founder of the kind of the San Diego Minutemen. They all have different names because they're all like affinity groups, you could even say. They all start in their own processes, but totally different.
They can't stand each other. All of the groups are led by like one person. And they really can't stand each other. And they're pretty crazy. Like he, like literally, it's a nut job. I mean, he's, yeah, but he talks about ninjas crossing the border and stuff like that. Right, it's scary. But so this is what we've been, I mean, this is what we've been dealing with in San Diego and California lately. But like I said, they're only really a recent manifestation of something that's been going on for a really long time. There's been pretty widespread anti-immigrant sentiment in California. That's really been organized over the last 10 years. And it obviously goes like very much deeper. It goes the best way that I can talk about it is growing up in San Diego. You have this border here. And you have, San Diego is a third Latino. And so you have millions of people who have a very, very close experience of the border. And then you have another population who is really like actively not seeing the border. Because for a lot of people, the border doesn't exist. You can go one way into Mexico and come back the other way. And so it exists only for one population. And there's all of this discourse about, and then to couple that, there's all of this discourse surrounding globalization, with the elimination of borders or borders are like fading away, you know. But of course, we all know that that is purely for capital and goods, and not people, except for certain privileged people. Have, you know, privileged status of citizenship. And so what you have is this border, and it's really, really changed over the last 10 years. The border has always been this zone of contestation. That's probably that's one way that I can think about it, is a zone of contestation, as a place that's permanently under construction, because the border means so many different things. Like in Mexico, they talk about the border like in two ways, or in lots of ways, but in two primary ways. That's la línea, which is like the actual fence, and then la frontera, which is like the region, and it encompasses a lot of more metaphorical things about what the border and immigration controls and all of those things encompass. And so a lot of what we do in San Diego, it's like once you start to see it, I mean, it's obviously like a lot of people that work in our group, it's something that they've always seen, it's something that they have a really deep experience with, something that divides families, it's something that is right in their backyard, this kind of this war zone. But then for some other of us, it's something that, you know, it's kind of like this unveiling. We're like, oh my God, now I see the world very much in terms of like through the border.
The idea of this distinction between la línea, which is the line, which is that, you know, you could call it the fence itself, is very situated within the general region of the La Frontera, which is a very it goes on both sides as a cultural sphere, you could say. It's a region with interaction. And what's been happening is that the Frontera, which is this region, this almost cultural space of hybridity, is being shrunk into La Línea, with people trying to block out this culture and trying to, you know, say, we're going to make this line an actual line and make it a distinction between two zones, when in fact there's no, I mean this distinction is created and constructed between communities, separating both tribes that have lived there for, like, indigenous people, and separating mestizos, and separating people from the United States, and separating communicativity, and trying to reduce this space down to a line. And to do that, you need weapons, and you need technology, and you need public support, and you need media, and you need a sense of identity, and you need a sense of who we are. And when I say we, I'm talking about the American here, who we are as an American people, and who we are that we need to push out this frontier, push out this border, and make it a line, make it a wall. So the fence here, it's not really the border. I mean, the fence has gaps everywhere. The fence is like, I think in other parts of the video, you'll see that the fence, you know, there's this part of, there'll be a part like this that's just missing. There's parts of the fence that are just like as thick as this chair. But that doesn't matter, because the border is used in like in arguments and concepts and in identity as a very central part of how to secure, of security. Whether or not the line is there, whether or not the line actually is strong, you know, there's a lot of abstraction happening at the border, where people take this concept and abstract it, and use it. And even, you know, liberals and radicals and anarchists, people abstract from the border stuff too, and use the border within arguments about, you know, security, without situating it within its geographical and political and social context.
Well, so I talked about the border as a site of permanent construction. The border, like up until about 10 years ago, in most places there actually wasn't a border. There was no wall. Sometimes there was like a little fence. And there's been this really active militarization of the border. And that has really, really corresponded. So you have this dual thing happening. There's all kinds of contradictions that happen at the border. You have this dual thing happening where you have an integration of the region. So you have a lot of its economic integration. There's a lot of communicativity between communities. You have communities that are far more connected, like where the Minutemen recently came, or actually didn't come, because they were pretty much told like that they weren't welcome out in Calexico in California. It's connected to Mexicali and Calexico. Those two communities, like Calexico on the California side, is far more connected to Mexicali than it is to like the United States in a lot of ways. And so you have this real integration, and this real, there's a certain amount of autonomy and regional identity. And yet, at the same time where there's this integration happening, there's also this really intense militarization happening, where you have the like the real rigid construction of giant walls, and a lot of places now that they're building triple fences, which are like three big fences with two border patrol roads in between, and you have a really really intense migration control regime implemented. We'll talk a little bit more about the war on terrorism. A lot of this is happening under the kind of the guise of the war on terrorism. And so while you have this integration happening on the border, you also have this deepening divide. And what happens is a lot of people are using a lot of people like the Minutemen, politicians are using the border, you know, this arbitrary line as a real stark demarcation line of describing who we are as a nation, and then like how going back to that concept of like an area of contestation, like this is a region that is primarily Mexican, and it is certainly not an area with an identity that is, it's not white, it's not Protestant, and so you have a region that certainly doesn't identify with like American Anglo-Saxon ideals, and yet you have a lot of people that are using the border as this strict demarcation of what the nation state is and what we are, and then projecting out from there. So there's very much it's very much like an occupation scenario, and a real battle for sovereignty and who has the right to rule an area. And so, I mean, there's a lot of discussion about occupation, but like I said, there's all these contradictions because you have a lot of Border Patrol agents who are Mexicans and who have like crossing stories, like really close to them, like their family crossed.
A really good book on the intense militarization and occupation of the borderlands is a book called Operation Gatekeeper by Joseph Nevins. And I'm going to pass it around. And in the back of the book, there is maps and statistics about Border Patrol, maps of the region. And people want to pass this around.
Yeah. And I mean, like the area of contestation goes back all the way to colonial times, where like you had this region where you have the French, the Spanish, and then the American colonists all vying for this region. And those are all like imperial powers that don't have complete control over what's happening on the ground, over the populations that are on the ground. You know, and all of this, of course, neglects indigenous peoples. Like, there's several tribes that are actually split by the border, and you have lots of, and then with migration, you have a lot of like the majority of migrants in the United States from South America and Mexico are indigenous, and so it kind of raises this really interesting question about the two states of the United States and Mexico as well as a mestizo-dominated government, and what happens when the majority of migrants from Mexico are indigenous migrating between these two governments. So. Are these two nation states?
A lot of this poses very interesting questions for radicals and for people who are working on the border. We think that it's to get a sense of the essence or the identity of an object, or of studying the limit of it can really tell you about what's happening inside. Studying liminal cases of certain phenomena. So studying the periphery of the country can actually tell you about the inside of the country. And by that, that doesn't mean studying the periphery of the country by saying, just thinking about the border in terms of defense, like it's talked about, but studying the border and working on the border to gain access into struggles for human rights, struggles against capitalism. And we're going to hopefully go into that at the end of the talk. We're not going to talk that much tonight, but...
Right. And I mean, obviously you can tell that a lot of this is disjointed and not completely coherent. I mean, these are issues that we're kind of deeply involved in organizing right now, but a lot of concepts that we're kind of wading into. So I'm really eager for a conversation about this.
One thing that we want to do when we begin to critically reflect on this work is to think about, like, what does it mean to, if you're fighting racism or fighting white supremacy, how effective is it if you're just attacking these fringe groups, right? If you're putting your effort on fringe fascist groups, and they're not called fascist groups, they call themselves neighborhood watch groups. Right. So we hope to take the criticism seriously about limiting your struggle to the extremes. Aren't you ignoring the institutions that make these extremes? So that's why we're kind of trying to step back and talk about the border itself. And one of the main functions of the border that produces such extremes of racism is this concept of security. And the concept of security has been created from a history of foreign policy outside of defense. We've transferred from defense to security now. Security is a more active action. And since the war on terror, the border has really become a front in security. Security both talk and security actions. As the book shows, military technology, military spending on the border has gone exponentially up in the last couple of years. Especially since 1994, when Operation Gatekeeper went into effect. Operation Gatekeeper was put under by Clinton and Janet Reno, by Democrats, by liberals, who really think, we need to secure the borders. You can even hear liberals today talking about securing the borders. Bill Richardson from New Mexico declared the border a zone of chaos, a zone of anarchy. We can talk about that later.
Robert Byrd, maybe I think they call him one of the most liberal senators, used the necessity of securing the border as the reason, or as the excuse for pulling out of Iraq, or saying that we need to pull out of Iraq immediately so that we can secure our borders, so we have the resources to secure our borders.
And we think it's critical to intervene here, right? If you pull the war in Iraq and put it on the border, then we've lost, right? If you pull the troops back and put them on our country, then what the fuck's happening to our country, or not to the country, but to humanity, basically.
It's funny that they call it chaos on the border, because it's really, really not. I mean, in some ways it is, but it used to be a lot more chaos, and it was obvious chaos. Like in San Diego, people would cross. There was this carnival-like fest, in Tijuana. There was an atmosphere of certain amount of carnival. People would gather at the border at in the afternoon at dusk, and there'd be fields near the border where there people would hang out and be little stalls, and then as it would get dark, people would run across, and there'd be thousands of people, and this is a really urban area, but now they've been pushed out into the desert, and 3,500 people at least have died in the desert crossing, because a lot of people have been pushed into Arizona and rural California and New Mexico and Texas, but it's pretty ordered, or at least it's out of sight and quiet, whereas the border didn't used to be quiet.
This year is supposed to be the worst year of deaths, migrants crossing the border, than any year ever has been, because of the heat, because of the, who knows, because of the Minutemen, we're not at the, this is not the peak of deaths, but it might just get higher next year. So it's on an increasing rise. July was one of the hottest months people usually died crossing the border because of dehydration. Sure.
I've heard about one group, the Water Angels or
something.
Water Angels.
Yeah, that maybe you could talk about some of the
the
solidarity efforts, like tangible things at the border.
Yeah. So we work with a coalition. I mean, we're called the Organic Collective, just a group of 10 to 20 of us. And we work in a coalition of groups called Gente Unida. And within this coalition, there's tons of different solidarity groups. One of these groups is Border Angels, who goes out and puts water on the border. They put water on the border at key spots during the summer and the spring, because most people that cross die of dehydration. And during the winter and the fall, they put blankets in the border region, because most people are really cold. Another group we work with is Angeles del Desierto, which is the Angels of the Desert. And they're these like great independent paramedics who have this like paramedic truck, and just, these guys are awesome. Like, they go out and do, like, they just save people all the time. And they get arrested for saving people all the time because they're transporting illegals, which is a crime. These people were out in the desert confronting the Minutemen every day. I mean, these people were doing direct action, like none of us. Like, following the Minutemen, screaming at them with their bullhorns, face to face, confronting them, calling them cowards, calling them racist, getting arrested, getting out of jail, and doing it again the next day, all day long. Amazing human beings at the border, putting their lives on the line, because they don't think migrants are different. They don't think migrants are other people or illegal or aliens. I mean, they're really, if you want to think about migration as people from the outside coming inside, then you'll never get to a point where you can think of migration as a social movement, as migration being primary and stability being kind of secondary almost. I mean, these people think that, you know, in a sense, what happens to your sense of community and identity and democracy when a migratory life becomes your framework of analysis? And hence, I mean, these people are human beings who are exploited as a class as well.
So do the Minutemen like outright kill people? Like, when they come across people trying to cross the border, do the Minutemen shoot them? Like, and what would be the consequences for them? Like,
Minutemen go to jail?
So they're usually pretty careful, because most of what they're doing is a media spectacle. There's all kinds of things that happen on the border, like lots of unexplained deaths and murders, a lot of which the Border Patrol are responsible for. Couple of people were shot in the areas where the Minutemen were patrolling in July. We don't know if it was them or not. So, it's hard to say.
But, like, in theory, if a Minuteman was to come across someone who's trying to cross the border, like, what would they do?
So they have standard operating procedures. You can read about it online. And, I mean, there's different groups, right? So they all have different ages. Some have guns, some don't have guns. And what they tell their members to do, A, they say you can't be racist. Right. That's what they. If you can talk to the Minutemen. You can call them, talk to them. They'll say you can't be racist, but you can only detain, you know, the brown people. They're supposed to. You can't corner someone, but you can talk to them, and you can call the Border Patrol. And that's what they say you should do. You know, if you're a Minuteman, you should do like a neighborhood watch. Like, you talk to them, you know, sit them down, and you call the Border Patrol, and the Border Patrol will take them away and send them back home. Does that always happen like that? No. In Arizona, hundreds of people were caught, detained, people humiliated. I don't think there was any shots in Arizona, but dehumanization, humiliation. This one guy from San Diego was out there making people wear t-shirts that say, "I was caught by a Minuteman." I take pictures of it and send back home. His name is Brian Barton. He's running for Congress. But there's every night is different at the border. I mean, that's something we learned going out there, is that like every night is a different theater.
With the Minutemen. Not with the border and the Border Patrol. It's very much the same.
Yeah. So the Minutemen, one night people were trying to cross, and a lady was giving birth. I mean, she was actually in labor on the Mexican side of the fence. And the fence was like really low, it's like this big, so you can step over if you want. And she was giving labor on one side, and the Minutemen surrounded them on the other side and just kind of took pictures, just stood there.
Didn't know what to do because they didn't want to take her across. So that her child would be born on the U.S. side.
So some people from the Gente Unida camp, the coalition we were part of, actually were out there, because we had a really good communication network where everyone was kind of trying to patrol their own Minutemen, and people went out there, found them, and called ambulances, and the ambulances got there, and they kind of sat there for an hour, too, deciding what to do. They're like, do we help this woman? The Minutemen were there yelling at the ambulance people, being like, you don't want to have them have a baby in our country, you know, give them our welfare, give them our rights. So it puts the paramedics in a weird situation. You have people from our camp saying, like, this is a human being. If you don't help her, like, what are you, like, you're doing an injustice, and you're hurting people. After an hour, the paramedics took her and put her in the country. And the Minutemen actually tried to get, like, a letter campaign, you know, to fire these, like, paramedics and stuff, to talk to the mayor about no more people being born, stealing our welfare. There's three, you were asking about the reasons why the Minutemen do this, I think, or you know, are they really migrants coming in? The Minutemen have a lot of reasons. One is, I mean, the standard reason why people don't want illegals is they're taking our jobs, right? Taking our welfare. Mm-hmm. What's interesting in the last 5 years is that it's transferred into this primacy of, it's dangerous, right? Like, this is an issue about security. If you talk to these people, if you read their websites, it's also now about bringing diseases in. It's about bringing diseases in, right? Seriously, people talk about this. And it's about drug smuggling. And these are all issues that the Border Patrol works on, right? The Border Patrol actually uses these arguments all the time. The Minutemen are making it mainstream. Minutemen are making it acceptable to everybody to get more money funded to the Border Patrol, get more money funded to this, like, institutional repression. So the Minutemen are like a funnel for the border, I mean, we think. So if you stop the Minutemen, what happens to the Border Patrol? Yeah, who knows?
I work with sort of the point on, like, the other side of where you're working on the border. I work with where immigrants are detained and deported. So it's part of this, like, larger cycle of immigration policy. And I'm really interested in a couple of things. I mean, one of the things that strikes me about the Minutemen is that we have reacted to them. And one of the questions that I really have is, what is our solution? And when do we as a movement talk about a solution? And the solution that we had before 9/11 was amnesty. And obviously there's a lot of problems with amnesty, because amnesty only deals with a small number of people, and it doesn't address the border, the ongoing problems at the border. And I mean, one of the things that our group tries to do is talk a lot about when we didn't have a border, you know, when people weren't illegal, which is 1924. Up to 24, we had open borders. So it's not like that crazy of a thing. And we've really tried to, as anti-capitalists, as radical activists, put forward the no more borders, that no one is illegal. And it just struck me watching the video, racists go home, was like the primary chant of this loose coalition. And that's such a reactive, it doesn't deal with the problems in our struggle, which is that we're criminalizing and creating like an apartheid system for a whole section of the population, right? And what does that do to the rights of the rest of us? Which is what I hear you all saying. And I wonder if you could speak to this issue of, like, how do we really build a national response? I mean, the right has built a national response. They're organizing nationally around the Minutemen. And so how do we build a national response around what we want, which is not just racists go home, right? But is something much more fundamental than that, which is that people are not illegal. So I'm just wondering what you think of this.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's why, like I said, that we've been spending a lot of time on these folks, but in a lot of ways they're really insignificant, right? And that's, I mean, that's something that we're really struggling with right now, is how do we, I mean, this idea of building like a no border network in the region, you know, similar to like something like known as illegal maybe, or like the European no border network. But what does that mean? And I feel like a lot of it has to do with identity. Like, how do we talk about identity? Like, and this region, this country. And I mean, that's why the border is such a significant place. because it's very much used by both. It's very much used by the right, like as a way of strengthening the concept of citizenship and illegality. I feel like we have to undermine the concept of citizenship. Because, like, amnesty seems really insufficient of a concept to me.
Just a couple of responses. How about in the back? Then you.
I guess I think that we should talk in terms of, like, immigration is also, like, dislocation, and this is kind of part of, like, this phase of capitalism in terms of, like, it is necessary to, like, weaken organized labor and to, like, undermine, you know, like, people's welfare. And I think it's less about identifying, like, Americans, for example, and more about identifying immigrant labor as, like, aliens, as the other, or whatnot. And I think we should put the solution in terms of, like, rather than, like, kicking them out or, like, marginalizing them, like, including them and making them citizens and whatnot, and because the way that people see it is that, like, they're coming to, like, steal from us or whatever, but it's rather, like, you know, people have been dislocated or, like, repressed, and repressing them in the U.S., for example, as well, only, like, deepens the crisis rather than solving anything.
I would say, like, I think what you're saying in some ways touches upon why, and this question about where do we go or whatever our vision is, why border issues, I think, are such an important part of what we need to be doing as anarchist thinking and practice around kind of an anarchist vision, because border patrol does become about what does national identity mean. And I think it's one thing that I think we need to be drawing more lessons from is that there's very much a sense of the border patrol being linked to this threat of Mexican immigration, immigration from South America in particular, and that gets really reified in this idea of the border patrol being this 1924 Immigration Act thing. And I think the thing about the border patrols, I think a lot of people don't know, because our ideas about border patrol is so linked to this threat of South American immigration, that the Border Patrol was active before 1924, but it wasn't called the Border Patrol, it was called the Chinese Patrol, and that really this idea about defending our borders and this consolidation of national identity came about in the late 1880s, 1890s, around stopping Asian immigration and these same kind of threats of fears of disease and jobs that came about as a way of consolidating this nationalist American identity. And I just kind of want to point out this book, At America's Gates by Erica Lee, that really thinks about Asian immigration as this key moment in this key transition as in nationhood. And also this other book called Impossible Subjects by Mei Nye, which traces the idea
of... Sorry, can you just repeat that again?
At America's Gates by Erica Lee and Impossible Subjects by Mei Nye, which is NGAI. And she kind of looks at this idea of the shift of the illegal and the sense of who the illegal is from an Asian, from a Chinese image to through Filipino immigration, through kind of the contemporary idea of the threat of the Mexican illegal, and that how these work to, for her, she's got a more of a liberal analysis and this idea of creating this impossible subject because it pulls up the contradictions, I mean, it's a critique of liberalism, I should say, in terms of pulling up the contradictions of the liberal idea of citizenship and yet the need, this economic need for immigration, and how that creates the immigrant, the illegal immigrant, as an impossible subject within capitalism and within the capitalist democracy. And I think it points to the way in which we do need to shift our whole idea about whether we're talking about citizenship to, I think that this central idea of the border needs to be consulted within anarchist, a future of an anarchist vision. And I'm really interested in what we can do with shifting the model of citizenship to this model of denizenship, where it does become more about recognizing the historical process, the historical idea of migration at the border, where it isn't like people never used to cross this line, but there are indigenous groups that are split through this line, and there are communities that used to be able to move across the border more fluidity when the border wasn't as militarized.
Yeah. So many exciting things. I don't know. I'm a really big fan of the Organic Collective. They're doing great things. I work with a group called Solidarity Across Borders in Montreal, who I think like shares a lot of the analysis. And I guess one thing that you brought up that I found interesting was like, okay, well, the Minutemen, and I guess a lot of their analysis kind of come from rural parts of the states. And I mean, obviously, like, that analysis is in cities as well. What I've found through my own work, for example, is like we did one of our big actions we did over the summer was we did an 8-day walk from Montreal to Ottawa, to go to Canada's capital to make demands about immigration at the government. And going through a lot of very small towns between Montreal and Ottawa, we're handing out leaflets all along the way. You meet people who are extremely frightened by the, you know, open the borders analysis. And this isn't even racist. It's just like normal everyday people who are kind of brought up and inculcated with this idea that, you know, migration as a threat. And so I'm kind of thinking like how to consolidate like a few different perspectives around like this idea of open borders, because one thing is in Solidarity Across Borders we started to mobilize around this idea of regularization, and it is a reformist thing, because it's regularizing people to become, you know, Canadian citizens. So you're still not really you're not pushing forward a critique that the border shouldn't exist. But I mean, I think in a lot of ways, it's extremely radical. It's like there are these 12 principles for regularization. So it touches on the fact that people, like every non-status person in Canada, which amounts to, people say between 200 and 400,000. So it's an extremely significant portion of the population living within Canada's borders, that all those people should be Canadian citizens. And it deals with the fact that queer folks should be granted like the same marriage, so people shouldn't be discriminated on because they have like different family norms and stuff like that, and people who've been living underground for whatever reason should be regularized. So it is radical in that sense, but I mean, I guess the question that I wanted to pose, and like maybe other people can offer up different perspectives, is like, as anarchists who fundamentally believe that, you know, borders shouldn't exist, you know, how to, I guess, reconcile that with, you know, working with people who are the most directly affected by borders, being migrants themselves, who are literally dying to come to places like Canada and the U.S., who do want Canadian citizenship, who, you know, don't necessarily share that analysis. Like, I'm wondering, you know, how to consolidate these things to eventually maybe be in a position to, like, really push forward, like, a no borders analysis, because I don't feel like we're there yet, but...
I just wanted to say, I think that the whole idea of regularization is actually extremely threatening, and that we need something like this in the United States, because the whole purpose of having all these undocumented people is to strip them of basic political rights. Yes. And then once you've stripped people of basic political rights, you can treat them any way you want and drive down wages. And I mean, that gets into the whole system of capitalism and why we have undocumented people here. And I think that's really crucial. That's part of our analysis. So I think that demanding citizenship is like a reformist step, but it's also a necessary step so that people can demand political change in more radical ways. We work with a group in New Jersey, my umbrella group, New Jersey Civil Rights Defense Committee. We work with a group of day laborers in Freehold, where the Minutemen have come to attack quite a bit, and the day laborers have mobilized a lot, and they demand a minimum wage at the site where they're picked up, and they're very organized. They have like a hiring hall.
And it's been interesting to work with a group of day laborers who are part of the National Day Laborers Network, which I think is something we really need to hook in with. They had their national conference. They had like 130 delegates from around the country. So like that's a border issue because the day laborers are constantly, they're going back and forth all the time. And I just think that, you know, we need to be able to work with networks like that. And our group has really prioritized that and come up with transitional demands. Okay, we're not going to get no borders right away, but what is a series of transitions and how do we get the idea of no borders out into the political discussion? And what are the steps along the way? I really am excited about seeing your regularization principles because it sounds like a basic civil rights document. You know, not just for immigrants, but for other people as well. And I think that's really crucial that we tie civil rights is not just about immigrants, it's about all of us. Because otherwise we have a very marginalized movement of people with no political rights, right?
It's on our website, solidaritycrossborders.org.
Great, thanks.
Actually, first a question. What was the name of the National Day Labor
Network? The National Day Laborers Organizing Network.
Okay. So one thing that's really interesting is that we made these posters, and like one of the things that it says on there is like citizenship for people can have these citizenship for all undocumented people. And some of the comments that we got back is that that's a concept that a lot of, I think specifically the Mexican folks that we talked to, weren't really comfortable with. Like, a lot of people think that, like, or they don't want to renounce their Mexican citizenship or their Mexican identity. And I thought that was really interesting, and I think it's really powerful. Like, because we don't just want to assimilate people.
And in the same topic, and responding to some of these points, I think one thing that anarchists can do by making this the struggle central to anarchist vision, which is like, what does it mean to have no borders? No borders can be, can be a mobilizing momentum. But within this, there's certain steps that we demand, and we really respect no one as illegal. Because they're responsible anarchists who are working.
Well, solidarity across borders.
Solidarity across borders.
As well.
I mean, we respect all these groups. I mean, we don't really know the differences between any of them, but really. Well, I mean, we just respect them because it's responsible anarchists who are organizing within migrant communities or doing solidarity with migrant communities, working with these issues while maintaining a radical vision. And that one thing that we can do to make this primary is, as our friend back here was saying, is. Do we support how do we allow migrants to come in and support them, right, and give them rights? Because they're not others. Well, I think I forgot the comment he said, but I was basically trying to argue that do we put the emphasis on supporting the migrant community and supporting migration as a class, as an individual concept? Or do we focus on insecuring our own identity, or insecuring our own concept of who we are, right? We think these are both essential. I mean, you don't have to pick one. But at the same time as supporting migrants as a class, as a human struggle, right, as a mobilization, and like as a dislocation, that's what you're saying, we could also insecure our own sense of who we are, right? So there's a double movement going on. Because, I mean, as people with the privilege of claiming citizenship, if we in a sense cut up and actually throw away this veil and appreciate our own hybridity, that can do one more step to break down the barriers separating all of us. Back here?
Yeah, I think that is really important because it's focusing it as a social conflict and not a conflict between one sector of society and, like, the government institutions. And, you know, seeing the Minutemen and seeing people protesting against them, it's a direct social conflict of totally incompatible visions and totally incompatible visions of how U.S., you know, how resources in the U.S. get shared out, what kind of social structure there is. And this issue of identity is really important in terms of, yeah, basically this process of creating new privileged sectors of society that, you know, as sort of profits are getting squeezed and stuff, and you know how to manage reform. You know, sort of saying, okay, we can have reform for certain privileged, you know, we are American, and this issue of how sort of patterns of building up a basis for people who, you know, protecting certain people at other people's expenses, and everyone's, it's, I think it's very important that wider social movements that are about reform are also dealing with these issues, because otherwise they become, you know, just privileged reform movements. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but it's not just the border issue, it's also what happens within the country in terms of services, in terms of jobs, in terms of different rights. That and it's a social struggle. With, you know, often you can, it's, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's really clear when there's two groups of people confronting each other at the border. It's no longer just border officials.
I'm just going to say, going earlier, people were talking about, well, this is reformist, but how can we say that at the same time as we're anarchists? I think, to a certain extent, I think the sister over here answered that it's reforms aren't necessarily reformist, and there's no contradiction between our fighting for reforms and at the same time having a revolutionary vision of a free society without borders and with universal citizenship throughout the world. I don't think we should counterpose that at all or feel embarrassed at all about fighting for things that are lesser than the whole thing, because right now we're, after all, a very big minority. And how do we get to become the big majority? It's going to have to be by fighting for the needs and interests of masses of people and show that we have the best vision, the best way to do it.
One thing I think I'm really interested in terms of, like, how do we articulate this kind of wider vision, or what fits into, I mean, I think that border issues in other ways are interesting because it's this place where so many different issues combine, both kind of bureaucracy within the U.S. and then these kind of questions of nationalism. And one thing I'm kind of interested in is that borders become really opposed to a bioregionalist vision. And I spent some time in Tucson when I was really interested in the way that they're fighting the wall there, because they're trying to extend the wall in California and Arizona in a way that will hurt the migrants. It's not one of the desert, but they're currently going actually through a bombing range. And you had this interesting coalition being formed of folks who worked on migrant issues, but also environmentalists, both in the U.S. and Mexico, because this wall was going to totally disrupt the ecosystems, and the particularly they just found out the jaguar in northern Mexico is actually crossing the border. And so you had all these funded biologists from Mexican state who are really upset about this wall being placed up because it's going to cut out this range of working with groups. And when we're rethinking about, which I think makes, I guess on one hand I'm wondering if that same kind of coalition is building is happening in San Diego, because you think so much about this one image of environmentalists as being very xenophobic, and that you had this really good on the ground example in Tucson of this coalition building happening. But also, if we're talking about how do we think about citizenship both as an important kind of reform that's going to call into these questions, and also something we need to challenge in talking about what is the role of citizenship, how do we bring a new relationship to place into these kind of talking about citizenship?
One direct response to that is that there's a binational environmental health coalition in San Diego called EHC, who is working on both sides of the border, actually focusing on the pollution and the environmental destruction that the border is causing in the region, especially the idea of the triple fence, destroying the estuaries and destroying natural habitats. And given that the border is actually a front of the war on terror, and that's a state of exception to all laws, that this act called the Real ID Act was passed, which was a rider to an Iraqi spending bill, which was about terrorism, basically eliminated all human rights and environmental laws in the region so that they could build this fence.
Actually, it's the whole border. Like no laws apply to the construction of border fences any longer.
And this is key, because what I forgot to say earlier is that this border inflects globalization and these issues in so many different senses, And this is just this one bill, how it ties to both the environment, the war, security, terrorism. I mean, it's just so clear that this is something that nice to be struggling.
I don't want to call it here, but actually there was like a coalition of like human rights and environmental groups. It was a little bit like too little too late. And I mean, also like how do we deal with something like federal legislation like the Real ID Act? It's big.
One more thing that happens is that there's a worker solidarity movement on both sides that show workers on the American side pollute environmental conditions in the factories on the Mexican side to give people a sense of what's happening on both sides.
That maybe leads into what I was going to ask about. Has the Minutemen conflict in any way been able to give us the opportunity to bring forth to public discourse the issues of globalization, the issues of free trade zones, the issues of, you know, people crossing borders because they're being displaced by poverty and all these things? Has it been a way to kind of bring that forth into public discourse? And the other sort of question I had was, on the one hand, while as anarchists we're against borders, at the same time, people should have the right to be able to travel in the way that people are traveling from one country to the next. In the same way, we also think that people should have the right or the freedom to stay put also. And that seems to be something that I don't see talked about very much, that people should be able to stay put, to have a home, to have community, to have all these things, because that's another part that is being lost in when people are being sort of forced by economic necessity or whatever to flee. So it's sort of difficult to try to talk about that, but I think that it needs to be brought up, and I think that it can be brought up in the discussion of why people are being displaced. So,
yeah, actually, just as a direct response to that, one thing that I find really interesting is looking at like a lot of the big mobilizations around the big anti-capitalist mobilizations of the last few years. I know at the G8 summit in Scotland this year, there was a really interesting mobilization called Make Borders History, which is kind of a play off of the Make Poverty History. There's also like Make Capitalism History, but I think it's like, and this is going back like when the G8 was in Kananaskis, Alberta, a few years ago, there was a big no one is illegal demonstration in Ottawa. And that was the first like no one is illegal demonstration in Canada. And I think that like a lot of groups are really trying to work like an anti-capitalist approach into this, because like that is an important thing, is not just focusing on like our border policy, but also like the root causes of migration too. So like I am kind of seeing it manifest itself like in other kind of work too that's happening. I just wanted to mention one quick thing also is, because I think it really ties into, you know, like the war abroad and like the war at home. Like you mentioned, the senator is calling for troops to withdraw from Iraq to police the border, and there's a man being detained in Toronto right now named Mohammed Majoub. And I just wanted to throw his name out because I think that people really need to know about him. Today, he's on the 80th day of a hunger strike. He's in detention under a security certificate, which they probably have an equivalent in the States, but it's no charge, security threat. And he's been on an 80-day hunger strike, essentially to not even to be released, just to have the right to have contact visits with his wife and children. But he's in like a really, really serious state right now. And his name is Mohammed Majoub, Mahjoub. But this is just like, that's another example. Like we have security certificates in Canada, and it's like, you know, it gives the state the right to lock up non-citizens on security, like the premise of national security. And it's like, I mean, we have to look for these, right? Like that it's an obvious thing of like the war on terrorism like being manifested in such like disgusting, cruel ways.
I guess it was sort of tying into what about the idea of these campaigns talking about people being able to stay put as well. And some of the language, the
maybe the no one is illegal I like better, or the t-shirt you're wearing, delete the border. But a lot of the language of no borders, I think, also is sort of troublesome from some anarchist perspective, because there's specific borders, in a sense, we're against. And the idea that they're creating a zone where there's no human rights and no ecological concerns, or no concern for human, you know, dignity, is in a sense a borderless region. And I don't really want a world where there's no boundaries, in a sense. And so maybe the word border and boundaries aren't the same, but I think within a lot of anarchism, there's a playfulness around, we don't want any kind of limitations or boundaries, and in a sense, especially around people's ability to decide what they want their lives to be. And I've been really impressed with the Zapatistas, in a sense of when they feel like the borders of their movement have been lost or taken away from them, they figure out what they want and they put that out. In a sense, they're asserting a different kind of border around their communities or their movements. And I don't know how that language gets put into movements like this. It's just so complex, this whole, you know. So anyway, it's just sort of another complexity to it, is like, how do you talk about a world where there are limitations of what can be done to humans and what can be done to the natural world, and what, you know, and those don't reside with states deciding that or Minutemen deciding that. But because I think this, it's the dislocation too. It's really an insecure time in human history when people basically feel like they're forced to leave. I was in Europe about a year ago when this town, which was literally divided in half between Poland and Germany, that was about, the border was about to disappear with the EU. And there was a bunch of articles where all the Germans thought the Poles were going to flee right across, and all the Poles thought the Germans were going to flee right across, and they were totally, both of them were like, we like where we're living. And it was such a funny thing, because the next day it happened, no one ran to the other side to, like, move, because the people were pretty happy, generally, you know, but it was such a funny thing. It's like, a lot of people do want to feel secure about their world, too. So that was the other, I don't know, I don't like the language so much of no borders, and maybe especially as anarchists, I think we should be really careful, because a lot of anarchism is basically, do whatever you want to do, you know, as long as, and that troubles me in connecting to anarchism with this concept.
I wasn't going to respond directly, so if you
had... Yeah, just something on that. I mean, this is not something I've been involved in, but I know a lot of people who were, so... In Germany, they've actually had quite tensions on this issue between self-organized migrants and asylum seekers and refugees and support groups around exactly this issue, no border, no nation kind of thing. And there have been accusations, I don't, you know to what extent it's true because I haven't been involved, but that it's become quite sloganistic at the sort of sacrifice of defending people against deportation, mm-hmm. defending basic labor rights, against detention centers, and, you know, has become sort of quite sloganistic about this great big lofty ideal, no border, no nation, but actually not, you know, and there's actually been quite conflicts between different things there, because it's very strong in Germany, both the migrants and self-organized migrants and refugees and asylum seekers and massive support groups, and it's not always smooth. And they've had a slogan, the self-organized refugee groups have had a slogan, they do a caravan each year before the elections because they have no vote, but they say we've got no vote, but we've got a strong voice, and their slogan is, we're here because you destroy our countries. And they really have the whole discourse of, you know, World Bank, IMF, mm-hmm. militarization, paramilitarization. They've also had, that's been conflicted because, you know, we're here because you destroy our countries, with anarchists who say we don't believe in countries and nation states. And, you know, they're actually often fighting for assimilation and basic rights, not assimilation, but, you know, basic rights, with a subculture that's kind of rejecting that whole discourse. And it's you know, with people who are clear, there's no conflict, but then with some there is conflict, so it's been quite important, the issue of language.
I think this language is critical, and to talk about either no borders or no illegitimate borders, and to talk about freedom to stay, freedom of movement, what we hope to see is spaces where radicals can get together to talk about all these issues together and organize against them. We helped to organize an encuentro in San Diego called the No Border Encuentro, where we had the central of the panel was indigenous groups talking about their culture before the border and living the struggles of the border. So we look to these communities as guidelines, right? Like we have to look to the people who are working on the borders as inspirations to how to fight against them. And fighting against the borders means fighting for the right to be, to have safety around those, around border communities, then, you know, that has to be integrated into your analysis. And we hope that networks of struggle can arise where people can talk about this more.
I guess something that I don't think has been mentioned yet is parallels between the U.S.-Mexico situation and Palestine. And this Palestinian situation in particular, like, they kind of, you know, a lot of Palestinian migrant workers make up kind of like the most exploited class in the oil industry in the Middle East. And then that serves to, like, reinforce nationalistic identities among those workers, and thus, like, keeping it all, like, really disorganized. And the U.S. has, you know, a very clear interest in keeping oil industry workers from being unified and, like, a political force. I would think that maybe then in the U.S.-Mexico border, we could tie it in with, like, there are specific economic interests in the U.S. in having people be dislocated and forced to migrate.
It's just, the border doesn't allow some people in and not allows others in. What it does is it regulates all people who allow in. Some are legal and some aren't illegal, right? So it definitely it does exactly that, right? It monitors a type of class of people, and when it does that, like someone said, like, shut over here, it strips some of these rights and it strips some of the protection and it strips some of the right to organize, right? And it strips some of the right to have justice in their communities, and this is systematic, right? This is a systematic act. When you're fighting against that, there are so many points of tension. So a lot of people say, you know, people should organize a workplace to fight for migrant rights, or organize day laborers, or attack border patrol agents, or work on binational agreements between workers to set up rights. But it's even more complex than on the Tijuana side, that their jobs are leaving also to China. And, you know, the maquiladoras, I mean, the stability they have are now gone too, even though the stability was exploitation. And the analysis gets deeper. So, I mean, I have more questions to your questions. So we want to end, or we want to just give out some websites and some things, or to talk about some groups really easily. DeleteTheBorder.org is a website that we hope can be used more often. It's like an open publishing site. People can write stories. We hope that anarchists, anti-capitalists, and radicals use the website to write about their stories on the border or issues about the border struggles. You have to sign up for an account, which is free, and then you just write about it and you publish stuff open. So if you're working on a border issue in New Jersey, we'd love to just write about it on the site and to connect these struggles and to form a network that can start building on each other's communicativity. Building on each other's struggles.
Canada too, of course. Canada. Everywhere. Right. All over the world.
Another group that was working on this stuff is called Swarm.
That was just a couple of working with the Electronics Disturbance Theater. That was just a couple of virtual sit-ins on the Minutemen and like Department of Homeland Security websites and 78,000 people joined a virtual sit-in against the websites and shut them down a little bit, stuff like that.